Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
You know, I've been talking about earned media value for quite some time on this podcast. My friends at Eisenberg have just raised the bar on earned media benchmarks with their Social Index. Social Index now gives you globally earned media values across a growing list of 6 geographies for all your KPIs across the top 7 social platforms: Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Snapchat, TikTok, Twitter, and YouTube. You can now visualize these values for deeper analysis, and they have a look-back window over 2 years of historical comparisons. Social Index is updated daily. Don't get stuck with old data. Over 1,000 companies have used the Social Index to understand the ROI of their social campaigns. And if you work with a social agency, you should demand they incorporate earned media values into your reports. Get your earned media value for social content. Visit earnedmediavalues.com/Allen. Again, that's earnedmediavalues.com/ALAN.
For all of us, it's about predicting where the consumer is going and getting half of it right.
One of the things we want to do is create ads that don't suck.
Embracing change creates great possibility.
I'm Alan Hart, and this is Marketing Today.
Today on the show, I've got Tony Wells. He's the Chief Brand Officer at USAA. He leads marketing, corporate communications, military affairs, corporate responsibility, and diversity and inclusion. And on the show today, we're going to talk a good bit about basketball and his time at the Naval Academy as he was getting his education and before going into the Marines and his transition into corporate life. We also talk about diversity and inclusion and why it makes sense to be inside marketing of all places in the organization. So I hope you enjoy this conversation with Tony Wells. Tony, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Alan. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you today.
Yeah, I can't wait to get into the meat of the marketing conversation. But before we go there, I cannot resist to ask you some basketball questions. You have to tell me what it was like. I think I got my stats right and years correct, but you'll correct me, I'm sure, if I got it wrong. But you have to tell me what it was like to go to the NCAA basketball tournament and play with fellow team members on the Naval Academy team, including David Robinson. What was that like?
Well, you know, that's almost 35 years ago and about 40 pounds ago. But no, it was really a once in a lifetime experience. Obviously, if you're a college athlete, trying to make it to the NCAA finals is always a goal that you start at the beginning of the season. So my senior year, we went 30-5, lost to Duke, unfortunately, in the Elite Eight. And it's an experience that's kind of formed who I am as a person, as a marketer. And I think the remarkable thing is that the guys that played on that team have just stayed in contact to this date, 30 some years later. So great experience.
Well, we can hate Duke together. So I grew up in North Carolina, went to both the NC State and UNC, and so I have a joint hatred. The only thing in common with those two schools is they both hate Duke. So.
Well, you know the funny part is David Robinson's son went to Duke and you know, played on the basketball team there. So I think he's got an appreciation for Coach K.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess the saying is, if you can't beat him, join him. Is that what it
is? I'm not sure I'm quite as forgiving, but I get your point.
Well, good. Well, did you always plan to go to the Naval Academy? Just curious. That's a quite an accomplishment in and of itself. So I didn't know if it was an aspiration you always had.
Yeah, I grew up in the Washington, D.C. area. So I was familiar with the Naval Academy. And I'd been to Annapolis as a kid. My parents had taken me to see the campus. So definitely familiar. My grandfather was in the Navy, and not that that factored into it, but I think it really, for me, came into focus my senior year in high school. And I was a recruited athlete for basketball, and it was one of the schools that I had the opportunity to consider and attend. And when I looked at the academic situation there, just a great engineering school, the fact that it was close to home, and kind of the idea of serving my country, I think it kind of lined up for me. And it's formed, like I said, a little bit of who I am. And it's a great school. Not your traditional college experience, but one that I'm proud of nonetheless.
Yeah. And to boot, you went not into the Navy, but into the Marines. And so I'm curious, like, is that a unusual track going through the Naval Academy? I just don't know. Kind of ignorant on it.
Yeah, the little known fact is the Marine Corps falls underneath the Department of the Navy. And so when you're a midshipman, you can elect to pursue a, you know, a career in the Navy or the Marine Corps. Technically, you can go to any of the services if there's certain criteria met. But about 16-20% of the class every year goes Marine Corps. So for me, it was solidified when I went on one of my summer cruises, and I just loved what the Marines stood for, this idea of servant leadership and just the physical nature and the prestige and esprit de corps and just kind of that that brotherhood that the Marine Corps is. So
yeah, no, I used to work with a bunch of Marines in another company, and they always picked on the Navy guys. That they always pat them on the back and said, thank you for the ride.
They are a great taxi service.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, well, cool. Well, how did you make the transition from Marines to business? What was that like?
You know, it's one of the things that at USA we focus on too, is just this idea of career transition. So I was very fortunate when I was in, they had started to assign officers secondary MOSs, military specialties. And I was selected to be a public affairs officer. So they actually sent me back to school to be trained for that. And that was right probably a year before the first Gulf War. And so went to training for that, came back to San Diego, MCRD San Diego, the recruit depot there in Western Recruiting Region, and got thrown in to being a public affairs officer. And that served as my transition out of the Marine Corps. And I started working at Nissan in their corporate communications department.
Awesome. Well, and you've tackled a number of companies along the way. Nissan, if I got it right, GM, Visa, 24-Hour Fitness, ADT, Schneider Electric, and now USAA. So you've seen a number of different industries. And I want to say congrats as well on the Chief Brand Officer promotion, it looks like, at USAA more recently.
Yeah, I think what's unique about USAA is the brand with a purpose. I, very fortunately, I've been a USAA member for 35 years. So I really felt when I came here, I knew the brand well. I've had every product we have, mortgage, life insurance, credit cards, checking accounts. So really came to the brand with a sense of what we stood for. I would say my career transition out of the Marine Corps and to where I am today has been kind of unique in that I've switched companies. So you raffled off all those brands. So that either says I can't keep a job, or I tend after, you know, 5 years or so to kind of want to stretch and do something new and different. But I feel really blessed. I would say I'm a generalist. I've touched a lot of different parts of the marketing and brand function. I've been on the agency side. I've been on the client side, B2B, B2C. And I think they've really allowed me to kind of bring a broad perspective to the role. Different business models, different company cultures, different ways of approaching the market. So it's been a really amazing ride. And I am one of those folks that feels so fortunate that I found something that I love personally. Like between you and me, I can't believe they pay me to do this, because I love branding. I love marketing. I love this idea of engaging with consumers or members. And so, like I said, feeling very blessed.
Yeah, no, I mean, I was really impressed. I don't look down on the various experiences and the type of companies that you've stopped at along the way. I was impressed just with, frankly, the breadth. And it does bring a lot of experience to the table for for any company to have somebody that you've touched two-tier markets, if you will, like in dealer networks and dealing with how you get to market, how you get your marketing to market in the automotive industry, to retail with 24-hour fitness and financial services on the back end with Visa, now on the front end, if you will, with USAA. And there's the B2B component in the mix as well. So that I look at that as a big value add, because there's probably not too much that you don't have some sort of analog for, or you know, some sort of metaphor that you might have seen in the past as you approach new challenges.
Yeah, it's I think it's in my current role. So we have marketing. We got an unbelievable CMO in Maida Rivera. Got corporate communications, and Lindsay O'Neill who runs that. Military affairs, Admiral Byrd and Mike Kelly, and then Harriet Dominique who runs our CR and our D&I efforts now, and then Tammy Brown with shared services. So I got to give a shout out to my team. They just do an unbelievable job. And what I feel really fortunate is that I think I can speak and understand their language. And that's a big part, I think, what we have to do as brand experts, marketing experts, corporate communications, whatever your CR corporate responsibility is, translate what you do to the business, to the folks that pay the bills, that drive members. Translate what you do and talk about how you can storytell. And we have an unbelievable brand with purpose, but we have to be great storytellers. And I think we're doing a great job, but I also think that's the role as a marketer or brand expert is to help make that translation successful.
Yeah. With this recent change to chief brand officer, what changed about the role? Like, did it take on a broader scope at that point? I mean, it's curious.
Here's what I would say. We brought some things in and we moved some things out. So we moved strategy and corporate development out. And what we moved in was diversity and inclusion. So across the functions, I really think we've got all the major activities that our company does, our association does, to talk to employees, to talk to members and prospects, and then talk to the communities in which we operate and serve. And so, at the end of the day, like I'll keep my one theme is this idea of storytelling with unbelievable insights. All of those functions help tell our story to the stakeholders that we need to serve.
Gotcha. Gotcha. Well, I'll circle back to the D&I because that definitely piqued my interest, but we'll come back to that in a few minutes. Why don't we tell listeners a little bit? I've always known USAA served military personnel and their families. It's all always been about members, but I didn't realize as I was doing some research that it was actually founded by officers. Like they had a real need, which makes sense, right? That that would be the trigger for creating an organization like USAA. But can you tell me and listeners just a little bit more about the brand and the purpose and mission that you guys are on?
Yeah. So we've been around almost 100 years. So we were formed in 1922 by 25 Army officers in San Antonio who, quite honestly, couldn't get insured by anybody else. And so they formed their own association. It was originally the United States Army Automobile Association. We've since made it United Services. But the idea was like people who have a need, who wanted to depend on each other and spread risk. And that's how we began. And so coming up on our 100-year anniversary, we have had a number of different changes along the way. We opened it up to staff NCOs and NCOs, and then we opened it up, probably the biggest expansion was in 2009 when we opened it up to veterans that had served prior. But it's a very unique mission. When we look at our kind of addressable market, it's about 60 million people in the U.S. So in some respects, Alan, we're kind of a niche player. I think, though, as I've gone through my career, one of the challenges that often happens in the marketing and the branding space is you want to talk to everybody and you say, everybody's my consumer. And what I think we've done is been able to really narrow this down to folks that have served or their family members. And so we have to get really, really focused in order to kind of be competitive in the categories that we play.
Yeah. I've always seen USAA. I mean, throughout my career as a marketer, I mean, it's always been held up, frankly, as one of the most loyal places, consumer loyalty, customer satisfaction off the charts. So you guys are doing something right by focusing on your members.
Yeah. We measure NPS, we measure overall satisfaction, we measure channel satisfaction. So it's a little bit of a religion. I will tell you that I've been at a number of different brands. I've seen NPS from Bain. I've seen JD Power. There's lots of different folks that are out measuring satisfaction. I would say for us, it's a little bit of a religion, and it's reported up at the board level. And I will tell you down to our employees that there's something unique about our culture, and that old Drucker saying, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And it's really apparent at USA. It's probably been the only company that I would say, I would bet a paycheck that 99% of our employees, if they were walking, if they were in the office, they're not now, but if they were, and you said, hey, what's the mission, that they would get it right. And that's this idea of financial security for the military community. And that's, you know, that's the focus of our brand. That's our mission, what we get up every day. And, you know, the other thing, Alan, I would say that's very unique at a lot of companies, you know, when you're doing your monthly business review or your quarterly business review, and you may have 5 minutes on the agenda around NPS, customer satisfaction, and you kind of hit it and you run. But there's so much that lies underneath there around what's in that score and how you make it actionable. And that's just a big focus for USA, that if you do right by the member, all the financials and the other areas of the business that you're tracking and want to be successful just naturally happen.
Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense. Well, you guys have been making news about doing right by your members recently. I think USA is giving a total of over $1 billion in dividends back to auto insurance policyholders during the pandemic that we're going through right now. And you've announced another $30 million in donations to a number of U.S. military societies and organizations. I mean, those are some big numbers. What are you hoping that these actions, and I guess in totality, are going to do or achieve?
Well, we are a member-driven association, a member-driven company. We have traditionally given dividends back to our members. So we think the last 45 years, we've done that. But I think what happened here is it was very evident from how the pandemic was affecting our members and their driving experience that we knew right away that there were savings. It was evident. We saw it in our, you know, our key performance indicators. And so for us, knowing that our members were in need, that this is a very unique time, the idea of putting money back in their pocket so that they could meet their household obligations was critical. So I'm so proud of the team. Our prior CMO, Wes Laird, I can remember the second, third week of March, like we got out of the gate pretty quickly. And we were the first in the insurance category to air a spot that was unique to COVID, talking about how we were responding. And we've kind of never looked back. And again, it's that idea of taking care of your employees that deliver the experience, taking care of your members, and then helping the communities in which we operate. And that's kind of where the $30 million donation to military societies and organizations that support the military resulted.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're all going through this pandemic on a global level. And how are you adjusting your marketing given what's going on in the world? It can't be easy.
Here's what I would say. One of the things that we wanted to do at the onset is to ensure that we were relevant, and the message that we were putting out was going to resonate. And obviously, there were categories where there's no amount of marketing or branding or communications would have been able to turn the tide of how consumers were viewing that category. But for us, we just decided that we were going to focus on things that mattered in this moment. There are folks that were panicking, the pandemic, the uncertainty of around it, the unemployment, and just how could we be of assistance? How could we help? How we could be true to our mission? And so we also arranged a number of different business support elements. Some of those were around delaying your payment or spreading it out over 12 months. And so across all our product lines, we brought what we thought were appropriate activities. And then we wanted to inform and talk about that. So that's been kind of a big focus of our activities. I will also tell you, though, that we went to look at what activities weren't going to be relevant anymore, what activities weren't going to be hitting our members or prospects in a way that would be of significance. We also looked to optimize and take things out of the mix that we thought weren't necessarily adding value. And so it was a pretty Herculean effort, a lot of long hours to get to the right answers and continued optimization. But I think the whole team across all of our marketing and comms, military affairs, corporate responsibility, they all just did an amazing job getting to an output that we could really be proud of.
Awesome. Have you guys figured out how to crack the nut on remote production or like getting around, you know, creative production during this time? I've talked to a number of folks and it's a challenge. Some people are figuring it out in small ways or little ways. I'm curious if you've had that experience yet.
Yeah, we're working through it. I will tell you that first spot we put out when COVID first broke was all our employees, kind of user generated content. And man, you know, sometimes that old saying, don't let a crisis go to waste. I think we learned a lot about what we're capable of doing. It was all hands on deck, our agency partners and publicists and others. But I think right now we're just putting the safety of our employees, of our agency partners, of production partners, safety is paramount. And so we're working through that. And as opportunities that may open up in specific locations to get back to filming, we're going to certainly look at it. I would say right now we're using a lot of user-generated content that we can put together that still conveys that message of caring and understanding that we're here to serve the military community. But we're not pushing the envelope there because we just think safety is paramount at this point.
Makes perfect sense. Makes perfect sense. I want to circle back, like I said earlier before, about the inclusion of diversity and inclusion in your responsibilities. That's highly unusual from the marketers that I've talked to, and maybe it shouldn't be. So I want to ask for your thoughts on that. How did that come about, and why do you think it works to be in the chief brand officer or chief marketing officer area?
Yeah, we looked at it. I think 70%, 75% of the time it's in HR. Sometimes it's in the general counsel or legal. And like less than 10% might it be in the marketing or brand organization. And so I think we were looking to kind of bring a fresh perspective. We partner heavily with our HR business partner and our head of HR, Pat Teague. So it's not lost that this is separate and distinct from HR, but we're transitioning it over because we really think there is a way to carry our brand message and focus across, like I said, all those communities. For employees, we do so much to support internal communication and conveying what's going on with the business and making our employees or helping them be brand advocates by understanding where we're going from a business perspective. There's the fact that we touch members with all of our communication, and we want to make sure diversity plays forward there. And then in our communities, in terms of supporting organizations and this idea of education, job creation, and financial empowerment. All of those have separate and distinct diversity goals. And we were one of the departments that played the heaviest across all of them. And so to some degree, moving it to brand allows us to hit all three of those key stakeholder groups with unique things. The talent and acquisition team and HR, they're still responsible for driving the programmatic elements of
hiring for your small business. If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Attracting, retaining, and developing folks, but we're going to help support and put some emphasis around that. And I would say probably the thing that I'm most proud of is that we've made it a strategic imperative. So as we build out our next three-year strategy, diversity is going to be one of the six key pillars that we're going to answer to and drive results on. So it's an exciting time. I will tell you, though, Alan, it's not that we're the only ones that done this. In fact, Antonio Lucio, I'm supposed to talk to him next week. He recently announced he's leaving Facebook. But when he was at Visa for a while, HR, in fact, the whole HR function was in marketing. So it's been done before, and we'll see. I'm super excited. I know our team is, and we've got a lot of work to do given everything that's kind of happened in today's world.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense as you describe it, that it would fit in marketing because of, to your point, like all the various stakeholders that you're communicating with or driving the communications for. If you're going to be inclusive, both in terms of making sure our communications, marketing, advertising, whatever it is, looks and represents all people, there's no really better function than marketing for that to exist. And I would imagine the talent organization inside of HR probably loves the added air cover that a marketing budget can help with.
Well, you know, the thing is, this is not for societal good. Like, that's a cherry on top of the sundae. But when you look at this, we know that we're in a war for talent with other brands in the financial services category. We know that especially Gen Z, Gen X, they look at what a brand stands for in terms of, is that a company that they aspire to work for? And we know that when our employees are deciding whether they're going to stay or go at a brand, that our CEO frames it up as like, every employee should have the opportunity to live up to their full potential. And that happens with all the folks that own the business and do business at USAA, all our general managers, all of our line of business leaders. But at the end of the day, being able to help communicate that, help sell the vision. And I also think the brand organization has a unique capability in terms of building external relationships, whether those be with folks that have expertise and points of view in the community or in the space of D&I or their organizations that help companies be successful. I really think we kind of have the secret sauce that can help drive success for the whole organization. And so, like I said, I'm just super excited. And we're also looking at the role that corporate responsibility and D&I linking up together, how that's playing out, because that's a new innovative thing that's happening in corporate America too.
Yeah, makes sense. It sounds like you've got a bit of a personal passion around this area as well. I don't want to put you on the spot, but I'm just curious about your own personal experience of being a diverse male in executive rooms. Like, have you felt the same pressures that we hear about, you know, and does that help you lead with regards to diversity and inclusivity? Just curious.
Look, I've had my share of bad experiences and good experiences. I will also say, just being very frank and honest, who I am as a leader, who I am as a brand or a marketer is informed by my experience as a black man. I'd be crazy to try to uncouple the two. But I think, again, this concept of empathy and trying to understand another is super important. And I'll take it off of race for a second and just bring it to sexism. You know, when the whole Me Too movement happened, I remember being with my wife having dinner one day, and I was like, Jesus, I didn't believe all this stuff happens. And I mean, I obviously knew that people were harassed and that there were cases of that, but not really in my 30 plus years of corporate America had I ever seen something like that was as despicable as some of the things that were coming out. And I was like, does this stuff really happen? And she looked at me and she's like, you're very naive or crazy. And so that is happening. My point on it is like, until I took the time to go get some education, to understand, to have empathy, to walk in another's shoes, then I had to go do the work. And it's just like on this issue of, and again, I'll take it away from race, which is in many respects a lot more complicated, not saying it's better or worse, but there's a added complexity to it. It will not do us a lot of, we won't have a lot of benefit if a bunch of women lock themselves in the conference room and try to figure out how do we make the world fairer and equitable for women in the workplace. Like, you got to have some men in the room and they've got to be willing to do the work. And I think that same thing happens on the race side. What I'm really excited about, and we've been doing this a lot at USA, is just having some very courageous conversations. And there's people that are for it and people that are against it. And there, you know, there's a lot of folks like, why are we bringing that to the workplace? And what I would say is, hey, when I drive to work every day, the reality is I'm a black man and I'm bringing some of my own personal biases and experiences, which can be good and bad, but I'm also bringing that weight into our office every day. And I think what we realized during this, since the murder of George Floyd, is that a lot of employees were bringing a lot of baggage or the burden of this to work. And this whole idea of being your authentic self, like who you really are, like, I want to be who I am. I don't want to. And I would say, look, in my experience as an executive, a Black executive, is I have to kind of sometimes cover up who I am. I think over time, I've let more and more of that out. So I think I'm being true to myself. But you want everybody to be able to come to work and be who they are, and within norms, just to accept that and embrace that to be a better organization. And again, all the research is out there around how that attracts more people to want to work for you, how diverse groups produce better outcomes and shareholder value, and how at the end of the day, they're a lot more innovative. So lots of data there that suggests the business benefit.
Yeah, I'm glad you're doing what you're doing. And it's been eye-opening for me. I mean, I'm a white man in this world, and I feel like I need to do a lot more listening. And a couple of folks that I don't know, one of them I know, but have kind of helped open my eyes was the work that Emmanuel Acho is doing with Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. Phenomenal, just approach to just having conversations, frankly. It's got to start there. And then another person that I've actually been fortunate enough to meet in person, Baratunde Thurston, has written a number of books and has started a new podcast as well on the topic of diversity and inclusion. So I would recommend folks check those two out if you don't have other resources to give. But to your point about executives, it really hit me in the face a couple of years ago when I heard the story. And I think it may have been Antonio that was telling this story that you mentioned earlier, Antonio Lucio. But he was talking about, it was either about him or it was Mark Pritchard talking about their experience together. And Mark divulging that, like, for years, most people don't realize Mark Pritchard at P&G has Latin roots.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I knew that.
Yeah. And he didn't ever really acknowledge it until in recent history. And I think there was a little bit of a, I don't know if it was a friendly, I may have the story a little wrong, but if there was a friendly prodding from Antonio, you know, to, hey man, you're Latin like me, let's talk more openly about our diverse roots. But I know they joke about it now when they get together. And I think that's the banter I heard, but it dawns on me, you know, I never thought about it. And maybe that's the problem. So having these conversations kind of can help open our eyes and then try to figure out from there once we're open to it, like, what do we do? What's the real work we need to go do to make sure this isn't an issue?
Yeah. And here's what I would say. I absolutely love my team. All 700, I'm all in. And every day I get up and aspire to be a servant leader. And that is in service to everyone. And I think some of these conversations get hard for some folks who go, well, does that mean I'm not at the table anymore? Like, no, everybody's at the table, and everybody should be able to play up to their potential, bring their authentic self. And part of this, again, is this idea of just like what's happened a little bit in our country is that everybody's gone to their corner and we're lacking a lot of conversations and dialogue in there. I remember seeing some experiment they had done at some university where they brought folks that were from different parties and they locked them in a hotel room for 3 or 4 days and took all the most compelling issues we face and said, can you work this out? And they actually got closer together by spending the time to do it. We have to go do the work. And that's, like I said, on all fronts, whether it's around ethnicity, whether it's around gender, sexual orientation, religion, whatever. We have to, I think, be more accepting and hear the story, sometimes the pain, sometimes the joy of what folks have experienced, because that's the rich texture of things like, hey, I want that in our marketing. I want that perspective in our communications. I want that in how we're viewing our corporate outreach. And again, I think that's the community we serve. The military community is very diverse. I will say one final thing, Alan, then I'll get off the stage on this topic, is that I think there's also been a lot of focus on diversity. And I think we realize now that this idea of inclusion is much more important. You know, it's like one thing to get invited to the dance, but if you show up and no one ever asks you to dance, then like, okay, do you really feel all that good? So I think we're spending a lot of time on inclusion, the idea of belonging. And my fundamental belief is that the pie can get bigger and deeper for everybody when we all seek to win and live and succeed together.
Yeah. Oh, well said. I'm going to transition. It's a little hard transition, but you've experienced a lot, been in a number of different organizations, very high level and marketing organizations. You know, we talked quite a bit about USAA, but as a marketing executive and leader, or just an executive leader, frankly, any advice for marketing leaders that are listening to this, like what they should think about or how they should tips for them?
Yeah, here's what I would say. I will tell you, I'm going to date myself here a little bit right now. When I first started out, I moved at Nissan from corporate communications over to advertising. So I was a regional advertising manager. Great job. 27 DMAs in the Mid-Atlantic and just a couple hundred dealers, just spending time with them and trying to drive success. All I wanted to do was out-shout Toyota. So it was all about, if I could put up 1,200 TRPs this month, I might have a good chance to beat Toyota in sales. It's totally different now. And so here's what I would tell folks, leaders. One, this idea around technology and just what's happening with data is the new oil. The idea of how AI and ML just, I think there's some unbelievable things that are coming, good and bad, from AI. But this idea that you could write copy using AI, that you could select a image or a creative execution. I'm actually on the board of a company, Pattern 89, that does this in the social media space. And you don't need to A-B test and take 2 weeks to do that now. Like, you can actually determine what's going to happen by just putting in the selection now and say, this one's going to be the winner. So this whole technology play, I think the idea of balancing and understanding consumer privacy and how do we deal with that? I think there's this idea of making sure your team is curious and that they've got kind of the skills for the future. I think other than IT, there is no corporate function that I've seen that has undergone as much radical change as the marketing and the branding space. The things that we did 5-10 years ago are like so far in the rearview mirror that you can't even see them. So it's staying current and this idea of being curious. And that's the one thing, you know, I think as a marketer, as a brand person, you have to be curious. You have to want to find out and then try new things and find new ways to connect with consumers.
Switching gears, it's always important to get to know the person behind the microphone. And I feel like we've already kind of got to know you, Tony. But at the same point, I have to ask my favorite question, which is, you know, has there been an experience in your past that defines or makes up who you are today?
Yeah, we talked about it a little bit at the top of the podcast, and that's kind of probably my experience being on a high-performing team. And, you know, that was my college basketball team. I think what it taught me was that you play for the name on the front of the jersey and not the name on the back. And what's funny about that is I played all 4 years, probably played close to 100 games. And there were some games where I might play 10 minutes. There were some games where I might not get in at all, or maybe even 2 or 3 minutes. And the job was to spell someone. But when you know your role and you can accept that and you know how that fits into the whole piece of the puzzle and how everyone is working toward a common effort and you put your ego aside and you do what's required, I think to me that's kind of the life lesson of playing for the name on the front versus the back, and this idea of being a servant leader, being in service to others so that something greater than you can be achieved. It sounds a little corny, but it's a little bit how I feel in my truth.
No, I think it's pretty interesting. Selflessness, if you will, can be a huge magical unlock for a group of people too. So, you know, getting them to work better together. So, no, that's great. Curious if there's advice you'd give your younger self if you were starting this journey all over again.
Yeah, wow. I would say maybe take more risk. You know, it's funny. You know, I have 3 kids, and my oldest, he's living in Africa now with his 2 kids over there. He's working for an ad agency and servicing clients in Europe out of there. And the idea that of moving to Africa and like with 2 kids and his agency is based in South America and your clients in Europe, it's like, it's crazy. And so at his age, I would have never taken that type of risk. It's turned out to be a great experience for him. And he's over, you know, he's over 2 years living in Africa and he's really enjoying it there. But I would tell my younger self to take more risk because if you kind of push yourself and you find what your limits are.
Got it. Yeah, no, that's an interesting global story and to do it with kids on top of everything. That's a big, I guess, big life story for him.
Yeah, it's It is a little bit of an amazing story. And I was very fortunate. I was planning on going over this year before COVID, but I went over last year and went to Ghana and saw the country a little bit. But it's just a story around taking the opportunity to think differently and to push yourself. And when he went over there, there was nobody there. So he was breaking trail on his own. So take more risk.
That's awesome. Well, a silly question, but I've kind of liked where it goes from time to time. I sometimes get tips or things I need to go buy. If you think about purchases you've made, say in the last year, has there been an impactful one, say $100 or less?
$100 or less. I got to tell you, I ended up getting a new light ring because that's like whoever was in the light ring business before COVID, like they just hit the jackpot. But just this idea of we're on so many, I mean, I know probably everybody's said that you've interviewed probably in the last 3 or 4 months, but it's just this idea of like, who knew that you needed light and how it would make a Zoom call more appealing and just a better experience.
Yeah, I know. We're all going to be influencers when the pandemic's over, doing our videos from home.
Well, you know, I saw a report that I guess Zoom this past quarter and their earnings did better than all of their 2019 in terms of revenue. So it's a phenomenon.
Yeah, it's real. It's real. Well, two last marketing questions for you. Curious, most marketers are looking around what's going on in the world around them, wondering if there's any brands, companies, or causes that you're following or you think other people should be taking notice of.
Yeah, look, I think this whole idea of ESG, kind of environmental, societal, and governance is going to become even more important to brands. I think there's probably a lot of folks in our fields who haven't really started to think about that. I think everything that's happening out now in the marketplace is suggesting that that's going to become more important. I do continue to like the things that Mark Pritchard and the folks at P&G have done. I think they found a way to have a narrative of how their brand can talk about things that are meaningful to consumers. And on the board A&A with Mark, and I just think they've done a really great job with some really, I think, creative and innovative work. Not for every brand, I would say, but they're really making it work. And I think they've got the results that prove out it's been successful.
Yeah, no, that's good. Last question for you. What do you feel like is the biggest opportunity or threat facing marketers today?
Wow. I think if you would ask me this question the first week of March, I would have said a very different thing. I think the pandemic is going to redefine some categories and some brands for the good and bad of it all. The digital transformation that most companies have had to undergo in the last 4 months is just, it's like it's full pedal to the metal. And I think in some cases, there's going to be fewer brands in fewer categories than we're sitting here today. And I think that to me is going to be a threat around how brands stay relevant, especially in a new world where consumers now have considered a lot of things that they never thought they would have to kind of deal with. I think the greatest opportunity is just this idea of how technology can help accelerate and finally, I think, connect the dots to the return on investment. I think for so long, marketers have had to find ways to show value, especially to the CFO. And I think as technology evolves here, we're seeing more and more ways that we can connect the dots. When you look at what's happening in, for example, in connected TV, like it's amazing where we might be able to go over time in terms of personalized delivery of message to the right consumer at the right time with the right offer. And I just think that's super exciting. But I think we also have to be careful that this whole discussion around data and privacy, that we don't abuse it and that we are mindful that there needs to be value on both sides of the equation.
Well said on all fronts. Well, Tony, I thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been enlightening and really appreciate your perspective today.
Thanks, Alan. I again, appreciate the time and it's been a good dialogue. And I can tell you, it's just an exciting time to be a marketer, a communicator, and I think our best days are ahead.
Hi, it's Alan again. Marketing Today was created and produced by me. If you're new to Marketing Today, please feel free to write us a review on iTunes or your favorite listening platform. Don't forget to subscribe and tell your friends and colleagues about the show.
I love to hear from listeners, and you can contact me at marketingtodaypodcast.com.
There you'll also find complete show notes with links to anything we talk about on any episode. You can also search our archives.
I'm Alan Hart, and this is Marketing Today.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.